I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. If I have to beg and plead for your sympathy, I don't mind, because you mean that much to me.
Ain't too proud to beg. Please don't leave me, girl.
Don't you go.
Ain't too proud to plead.
Hello, this is E. Christopher Clark from GeekForce5.com, and this is another installment of Generation GOAT. I am here, as always, with Jonathan Martin from Songs That Saved Your Life.
Hello.
I think I'm supposed to say... Oh, good. You said hello. What I was realizing is the last couple times we did that, like, I said say hello, and you said say hello.
That's
and
right.
It sounded very demanding or something.
Yeah, well, I've decided I'm only going to take this podcast literally, so I'm just going to play Simon Says with it, so...
Gotcha. So you're just back from a whirlwind tour of Europe, right?
Yes. I went to Italy.
And what did you do over there?
Wow, this doesn't sound scripted at all. I went to Italy and Switzerland.
Italy and Switzerland.
And I ate a lot of food and encountered some strange musical phenomena. Saw a lot of art. And ate entirely too much cheese.
Cheese.
Yeah. Oh God, the cheese. What do we do? We
different kinds of cheese.
So much cheese. I'll tell you. Do you want to hear about the cheese?
Well, you know, I am interested.
You are interested in cheese. That's true. You do run GeekForce 5. So, ha, boom.
I'm all about the cheese.
Right in the kitchen. Well, we flew to Venice and stayed on the exciting island of Murano, which is the next island over from the big island, and it's where people go to have a quiet, relaxing day away, usually. But we stayed there, and they make glass and stuff, so got to see some strange statuary made out of glass, and you know, did the usual touristy stuff, went to St. Mark's, ate seafood, went to the opera house, that kind of thing. And then we moseyed on down to Florence, and there's some stuff to talk about in Florence. And then we rented a car, drove around Tuscany for a couple days. Then we took the train to Switzerland, where Nora's brother is, in Fribourg. And then we went to Guia and ate way too much cheese in a fondue. It was an epic, epic cheese marathon. And then, of course, as you may have read in the paper, I staged a little earthquake because that's kind of my travel equivalent of wrecking the hotel room when you're banged up. My apologies to the dead and the homeless, but...
That's just how you roll.
Yeah, people had to know I was there, you know. So there we are. So yeah, so it's been an interesting couple of weeks. It's a little sad in the middle. My great great aunt passed away, which is kind of a bummer. Just starting with a high energy, peppy tone for our podcast.
Well, we should bring it back to cheese. Yeah, well, that's sad.
And she lived a long life, and now she gets to see her husband again. So, you know, that's cool. But
yeah,
it was kind of it's like the dude says, it's a bummer, man. You know, it's a bummer. That rug was a... Oh, wait, what?
That rug, it completed the room.
Really tie that room together.
Tied the room together. That's what it did. Tied
I think
together.
That's what I.
It was not like Tom Cruise and Renee Zellweger. No, it was not like that.
No,
it was not completely.
I think if anything should be on my tombstone, it should be he really tied the room together. That's that's what we need on there. But hey, I've been missing out on all the geekery. I've only just caught up on all of my TV, including last night's Lost.
Oh, you did see last night's vlog. So, we will have to save that for the end, right?
That's right.
It's our tradition.
Unless we throw it in the middle.
Yeah.
Just to
screw people up. Yeah, the geekery, the tournament's been occupying most of the time on Geek Force 5. And where we're at, we are in the final four. So there's two matchups ongoing, Star Wars versus Batman and Apple versus the Beatles. And the winners of those matchups will face each other for the honor of being Geek Force champion.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, we've had some interesting little... Star Wars was almost beaten by Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was... what happened is in that round, I turned off the thing that tracked the cookies and everything that tracked if you'd already voted, and let everybody vote as many times as you want. And we had one Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan who just decided she was going to sit there and click the button a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, life is tough.
She was very disappointed. At the last minute, somebody noticed and threw it up on Twitter, uniting the Star Wars fans, and brought it back around. But then somebody from Buffy must have seen what was going on, and it actually turned into quite a competition. It was probably the most exciting moment of this little tournament. And it's kind of leveled off since then in terms of people's excitement.
You know, once the ghost of George Harrison gets wind of round five here, it's all over, isn't it? It's going to reunite the ghostly traveling Wilburys with Tom Petty.
Is Tom Petty dead yet, though?
No.
Oh, I guess he kind of looks ghostly.
No, he's well-preserved, like Willie Nelson. I'm not going to say anything about the medicinal effects of marijuana, but there are a lot of really old, really youthful-looking pot smokers. I'm just throwing that out there.
You know, you said, was Willie Nelson one of the Traveling Wilburys?
He wasn't, was he? I don't believe so.
I always liked those guys. Well, at least the two or three big songs they had.
I think Tom Petty, there's George Harrison, there was Roy Orbison.
Right.
Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan, yep.
The other guy, I'm going to have to look.
Jeff Lynne, does that sound right?
Jeff Lynne, nicely done, sir. From ELO.
I remember listening to them a lot, and I really like Orbison's voice.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it is about his voice, but he could sing just about anything and make it sound good, I think.
It's true. I have a recording of him singing The Phone Book. It's awesome.
And what phone book? The LA phone book? London?
Tulsa. Yeah.
Of the Tulsa job fame. Wasn't there a Tulsa job in Los? No. Oh, the Tampa job.
Tampa job. So you got the Beatles versus Apple, which is it's kind of funny, considering their
very funny
business partnership for a while. I think I'm gonna have to give it. See, this is one of those things. Do I give it to them because I like them? In which case, I would give it to the Beatles, because I don't use Apple computers. There, that's the most diplomatic thing I can say. And yeah. There, whew, I found one.
There you go.
I almost said that they were toys. Oops. And then there's the Batman Star Wars, and again, I mean, do I judge it based on recent films? Which, you know, gotta kind of give it to Batman on that one. I mean, it's close. Phantom Menace, Dark Knight, go back and forth. Hayden Christensen, Heath Ledger. You know, it's pretty close.
That's a pretty close matchup. I don't know how you decide that.
If I go with classic, I mean, I was never a DC Comics person. I was
me neither. Yeah,
and I think the problem with DC is that one day someone handed me a copy of Green Arrow, maybe, and a Lobo comic book, and that pretty much did it for me right there. With the DC, at least with the Lobo. And yeah, so I don't know. That's tough. Any predictions? Are you allowed to predict on your? Are you can you be Beatles for a minute?
Yeah, no, predictions. I think the Beatles will win their matchup, and I think Star Wars will win that matchup. I just think as rocking as the other two things are. It's a bad way of describing it. You know, there are certainly hordes of Apple fans, but I don't think any Apple fan or fanatic is fanatic enough to say that that Apple as an institution is more influential than the Beatles.
You hear that, Apple fans? Chris says you're soft. Chris says you don't love Apple.
And as far as Batman, Star Wars, I mean, I think people like Batman, but I think people are obsessed with Star Wars. I don't know very many people that are obsessed with Batman.
Yeah, true.
It's just sort of, it makes me think that if I did this again, I would have to, I don't think any of the entries were undeserved. I just think some of them are less geeky. They don't operate on the same level as maybe. So some of them are real geek icons, and some of them are just popular culture icons, and so the Beatles, we don't necessarily have Beatles geeks because the Beatles are so widely accepted as awesome. It's hard to be a geek about the Beatles because everyone's kind of a geek about the Beatles.
True.
And Batman, less so. I'm not sure. Batman is, there's definitely less obsession with him than Star Wars. I think in terms of the films, I think there's more obsession with the people in the films and the people behind the films than with the character.
That's a fair point.
Whether it's Chris Nolan or Heath Ledger, I think that's, or even
Bale guy, right?
Yeah. Christian.
But nobody in the popular press ever talks about anything he does. So
no.
Yeah.
So I'm forgiven for forgetting his name. Here's the reason I forget his name, because my wife loves the movie that he was in for Disney way back in the day called Newsies, which is like a musical, lots of dance numbers about Newsboys. She loves that movie and was kind of had a girlhood crush on Christian Bale, and so I try to not think about him.
I can't make fun because I still really love the film version of Little Women, and I said it. And
the Winona Ryder version.
Yeah. I think it's really good. It's really well done. I watch it anytime. And
when he's in that,
he is. I think I had a girlhood crush on him. Actually, no. Wait, no.
I've always wanted to say, hey, let's watch Newsies and secretly sneak in American Psycho.
I was just going to say, how does your wife reconcile American Psycho?
She has never seen American Psycho. So.
Oh, well, all right then. Yeah.
So I think it would be interesting to see her reaction to that.
I am really looking forward to the new Terminator, though, because if he can bring out a little bit of the magic that brought Batman back from George Clooney to the Terminator series, I'd be very happy to see that.
Here's a really weird connection that just happened in my brain. Christian Bale in the new Terminator movie, in the previous Terminator movie, and he was also in Little Women, with Claire Danes, right? Claire Danes was Beth?
Yes.
Claire Danes was in Terminator 3 as the supposed woman who would be John Connor's wife, right? That's just blowing my mind. And I had a boyhood crush on Claire Danes. So
it's like Hollywood is made up of a really small group of people that all only work with each other, and somehow we're left outside of that.
I think you could almost put them together in a sort of 6 degrees of something. Some actor. There's going to be somebody.
Mr. Bale's a good candidate.
Yeah, he's, well, now he is. He wasn't in a lot of things. Was he? It seems like only the last few years that I've seen him sort of emerge as a major.
There's only
man.
One way to know. It's the internet to the rescue.
Yes, IMDb.
On the IMDb. Any surprise disappearances from your tournament? Actually, Christian Bale apparently has been in everything.
Okay, well, just, there you go.
Just
surprise disappearances. Well, I'm sort of looking it over here to remind myself, but no, nothing that really surprised me.
Were you seeing?
Well, I think Buffy. The fact that Buffy knocked out both Judd Apatow and Lord of the Rings, I think can be directly attributed to the fact that one of the biggest fans of my site is somebody who is a huge Buffy fan.
Dude, and so she would just come back. I can't give Lord of the Rings under Buffy. That's just no. I can't do it.
Yeah. Well. So yeah, I'm a little surprised, but well, I am and I'm not surprised that Buffy went as far as she did. In the comic section, we have a very contentious match between who and she dudes, between Alan Moore and Frank Miller in the beginning. If people want to go to the comments section of the Alan Moore versus Frank Miller. People got really like agitated. I had no idea that you had people who were on both sides who were so against the other dude. And like I still read comics regularly up until a couple months ago when the budget said, no, you can't buy comics anymore.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that there was such acrimony. Is that the word? Acrimony. I like that word, even if it's the wrong word. But,
it's a 50 cent word.
It's a 50 cent word. Speaking of 50 cent, no, I don't have anything to say about 50 cents.
I got nothing to say other than, is he dead yet, and how can I help make that happen?
Oh, I think it's amusing that you have to say 50 instead of 50.
No, you do. I don't.
Well, you don't. Okay, yes, you don't.
My respect or admiration for me to willfully say something of that sort.
I'm trying to remember if 50 Cent was one of the people that was on the April Fool's Nine Inch Nails album that didn't come out. Okay, yeah, here we go. I'm checking. It was called Strobe Light, and it was released I'm distracted now because the music started playing in my headphones as soon as I loaded it.
I believe Timbaland was producing that album.
Yes, Timbaland was. So no, I really want to read this set list, but I want this thing to stop.
I think I think you need to come back to the podcast, sir.
Yeah, so no 50 Cent on that album.
Alas.
Alas. I really wish that was real. I kind of do.
Only you.
But in terms of good wish fulfillment, musically speaking, have you been checking out Mr. Andy Hicks's website the last?
Yeah, we should totally plug our good friend Andy Hicks of the Pluto Tapes.
He is doing I don't know what he called it, but it basically amounts to covers April or a cover a day for the month of April. And he's done some interesting stuff.
To completely show us up with the 365 songs, just being Andy. It's amazing. But oh yeah. Good stuff. So yeah, so Andy's webpage we should say is geekusa.wordpress.com, and the covers are awesome. Anything from Blur to Sesame Street to Neutral Milk Hotel. Andy is so talented.
And supposedly some Nine Inch Nails coming.
That's right.
He's so talented. He makes you what?
Hate him passionately.
He is pretty damned talented. And yes, I don't know. Maybe hate's too strong a word, but man, I get jealous.
No, it makes me jealous. Like you wouldn't believe. His cover, my favorite one so far. At least I'm not sure what this says about me. His cover of Ernie's "I Don't Want to Live on the Moon," because I think that's one of my very favorite songs from when I was little, and it's a very sweet
version. That was a good one.
Yeah. So, man, that Andy.
You know what's interesting? I'm both jealous and this will come off wrong, but I'll say it anyway. I'm proud of him because I think the lad has had trouble being consistently productive, and he really is really doing it really well. Like I know he sort of confessed the other day that he doesn't do them one a day. He does them in batches. But I'm like, so what? You know, you're gonna put out 30 songs by the end of the month.
I cured cancer, right? But I kind of read some textbooks on how to cure cancer, and like I kind of did some research. So it's not like I just like knew how to cure cancer.
Right.
I just kind of, you know, I cured it, but you know, it's not like it's cool because I, you know, didn't do it from my imagination.
I know, when he made the confession, I was just kind of like, okay,
jerk.
I'm really interested to see what else he comes up with. Some people, including myself, made some crazy suggestions in his first post on the subject, and I'll be curious to see if he does any of these.
So you're waiting for him to do Britney, Kelly Clarkson, Madonna. What do you got?
No, the closest I came to anything pop was Julia, who I think we met at Andy's at the Pluto Tapes last show, suggested Umbrella, and I backed her up on that because I think it's a song that goes beyond Rihanna.
I'm going to throw down the gauntlet here and say that he should do something by something like Gin and Juice. That's I'm going to throw that one. I would like to see
Gin and Juice. It would that version the Gourds did of Gin and Juice is amazing.
I would like
Have
to
you heard that
in a medium that is entirely un-Andy like and somewhat disturbing. Yeah, so I'm going to vote for Snoop Dogg or Johnny Cash.
maybe a Snoop Dogg Johnny Cash mashup.
Yikes.
I did suggest that he play Shame About Ray, which the band did back in the day, and Walk Like an Egyptian, which he did as part of the encore of our very first show with him, which I don't think he even remembers. I think I brought it up to him once and he's like, I did.
Yeah, that was well. It was part of a medley of sorts, and I think we put the medley together maybe because we only actually knew how to play about 30 seconds of any given song, so it's a natural progression, which fell right in the middle of "It's the End of the World as We Know It," if I remember correctly. I seem to remember that happened in the middle of that song. So
those were the days.
Oh, those were the days. Dear, oh dear. But you know what?
I think it'd be an interesting challenge for us to one podcast try to do a podcast without talking about the band and see how long we went. Could we go 30 minutes? Could we go?
I think we actually need to put a podcast together where we reunite the members of the band and then not to talk about the band.
that is not a bad idea. I'm sure that we could get Beth and Andy. But
here first,
Ken and Jeff, I have no idea. You know, it's all about the reunions lately. Jimmy Fallon is trying to get the cast of Saved by the Bell back together.
I know, can you believe it? But apparently all he's got so far is Mr. Belding, so, you know.
You know what? The other day, I guess I think he's on break this week because of Passover, or at least that's why I have no idea.
And that whole thing coming up.
Yeah, and so one or the other. And But right before he went on break, he announced that Lark Voorhees, who played Lisa Turtle, was signed up. So he does have two people now, although admittedly the two least interesting people.
Are any of these people actually working in jobs right now? Like, could they really resist a paycheck, even if it's at scale? I mean, come on.
Mark Gosselaar, or Mark Paul Gosselaar, however he goes by, he was on NYPD Blue for a little while, and then I think he might have been on, maybe he wasn't on one of the CSIs, but I feel like he's been doing things here and there. Elizabeth Berkley, after Showgirls, did a few other things, but I don't
regular
know which.
Isn't now on some TV show? I can't remember which, but isn't she?
She might be.
Right, I seem to be reading somewhere that she's been acclaimed for her participation in some sort of cop show, but can't remember which one it is. But I'm just saying, it's like, wow, really?
What else do they have to do?
There's a reason why every time there's a Star Trek convention, they're able to find Marina Sirtis, you know? There's a reason that she just happens to be available, you know? Oh, really? William Shatner has nothing else to do? Go figure.
I remember the people at the comic book store being very obsessed with Marina Sirtis for some reason, like liking her in a way that I found creepy.
Well, I think they were stunned, as were we all, by the fact that she's really, really, really short.
That's true.
But
I do remember that.
You know, I mean, to put it in comic terms, you know, if you could get real comic book characters to come and speak, it would be like being surprised that the Scarlet Witch was free, you know? Or you know, someone of that caliber.
Right. That makes sense.
I'm just saying.
She really hasn't done anything. Patrick Stewart has done some things, but generally, like, TV movies or and of course he did X-Men,
he's doing a lot of theater right now. I saw him in London in the RSC's Tempest and Antony and Cleopatra, and they were amazing, so good.
But he had that in his background to begin with, right?
Yeah.
He was doing that long before he was on Star Trek. And of course, LeVar Burton and Brent Spiner are very active on Twitter nowadays, and that is interesting to watch.
True. Very true.
But some of them, yeah, just no career post Star Trek except for conventions.
Where's Jonathan Frakes? Where's he at? You know, the world is Will Riker-less as far as we can tell.
Yes. But not Will Wheaton-less, which is interesting. Will Wheaton was on there for, you know, not even just the first couple of seasons, right?
No, he was kind of throughout, but, you know, he was really solid in the first three or four seasons, and then kind of sporadically, and then he turned into a jerk because he was a teenager, and, like, they don't know how to write teenagers, so they all become jerks. But what are you going to do? But, yeah, no, his Twitter following seems to eclipse everyone, which is pretty amazing. I think something like 19% of the world's population follows him on Twitter. It's shocking.
He's an interesting cat, that Will Wheaton. There was something tangentially related to Star Trek just before we started talking about Will Wheaton, and I cannot remember what the heck it was.
Awesome. Aren't you glad you tuned in now, folks?
Here's a very bad transition. Star Trek came out in the 90s, Star Trek Next Generation, or started in the, whatever, it was around in the 90s.
Yes, I think 1990, but carry on.
Did you see that, I think it was Best Week Ever, the VH1 blog had a Best 90s Movie competition, and it, or not not yes, best yes. 90s most 90s movies. So not necessarily the best one, but the one that most represented the 90s, and the film that won was Kevin Smith's Clerks.
Oh.
Clerks beat out Clueless in the final round, and I gather that there's some controversy about that. The non-Kevin Smith fans are in an uproar. Because the Kevin Smith fans are organized and have a whole internet base, and
well, the other ones are fans of... admittedly clueless. So, you know, competition over.
Did you like Clueless?
I like Clueless. You know, that's tough to answer because I honestly don't remember. That's not me being coy. That's me saying, well, I know I saw it. I remember that there was a Counting Crows cover of The Ghost in You that I liked very much. It's kind of like Legally Blonde, which is a movie I'm sure I've seen on an airplane or something. But I really can't remember if I liked it or not.
Yeah. But see, so just on that basis alone... Just on that basis alone, I think Clerks wins, because everyone who's seen Clerks at least remembers Clerks, whether it's for bad or good.
True. It is a pretty visceral film in that regard.
You know, you either really like it because of the humor, and you're one of those people who are like, this is how I talk, or you're like, that is just 90 minutes of my life I'm never getting back, and... why did somebody pay to put that out, and why did I pay to see it? But I don't think anybody's really in the middle on Clerks. Or maybe you're kind of in the middle.
I think as someone who has attended a Vulgarthon and a Dogma screening, I'm pretty fairly definitely in the Clerks camp on that one. But yeah, I think it definitely does have that kind of effect. The other one is just, you know, it's one of those... Here's a cute satire of stuff that's going on at the moment, sort of, kind of.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure it's entertaining, but... You know, when they run down the history of, let's say, Heath Ledger's career, I doubt the first thing on the list is going to be, in terms of impact, is going to be 10 Things I Hate About You. Which, I like. I do. There. You heard it for your first listeners. And it's not just because, you know, Letters to Cleo's in it. Yeah. I actually liked it, and I'll actually watch it again.
I don't think I've ever seen it except for a YouTube clip of Letters to Cleo playing on a rooftop.
You should watch it. There, I said it.
I basically seek out anything with Letters to Cleo and Kay Hanley, and that's why I saw it.
You should watch it, and then we can talk about it. In fact, this whole podcast is going to be about that movie.
That would be interesting. I think we should do that sometime.
I mean, you know, at this point though, I think actually I would take Clueless over some of the horrors that I saw in Italy, with respect to cultural artifacts, because I am still recovering. I've just been watching so much TV since I came back.
What did you see that you are still recovering from?
Well, you know, the thing is...
Specifically.
The thing is, okay, I go to school in the UK, and English people, they like dance music a lot. And there are only a few radio stations here, and they're all, like, a mix, you know? So, like, you might get one... quote rock song followed by a dance music song followed by something else that's in a similar vein, and so on. Like, there are no stations the way there were when I was younger, where, like, this is the alternative station and that's the old people station and that's the station for stupid people. It was very easy back in the day, and I suppose in a way plurality is good, but I'm sick of hearing dance music on TV, at the bank, on the radio, but they love it, and nobody seems to care that it doesn't require any talent to make. And this is a pet peeve of mine, and I'll try not to go off in a rant. Anyway, so the UK and its dance music obsession is one thing, but in Italy it's just completely to the next level, and people of all ages love the dance music, and that's more or less like my kryptonite. It has this awful kryptonic effect on my well-being, and so I've been trying to surround myself since I've come home with nice music, happy music, friendly music, where somebody's actually, you know, had to play an instrument to make it, and it takes a while to recover. So,
right.
I would rather watch Clueless, I think, than ever listen to music again. I'd rather the only film I could ever watch in my life be Clueless.
It's not that bad a film, so you would.
It's probably not even that bad.
Yeah. So you'd be well served by listening to that or watching that rather than dance music. I actually don't mind some dance music, but there's most of it, like rap music. There's every once in a while there's some that done bug me, but most of it's just garbage.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, speaking of the rap music, I could happily ignore. Of course, you know, Eminem has put out his new song this week, and.
Yes.
Why can't some people just stay gone? You know?
I have dug some of the stuff he's done in the past, but he is just repeating himself at this point and not in a even fun way. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why some people don't just sort of realize they're done and go away and what makes it all the more anger-inducing is that record companies are going to put probably millions of dollars behind the promotion of this record, right? And yet something like Amanda Palmer's CD, she's in this whole fight against her record label now because of how they promoted her solo record. And you just sort of think about, like, how many millions of dollars are going into promoting that? That Eminem probably piece of garbage, and how little went into promoting Palmer's record, and then of course just, you know, extrapolating that going out into the movie business, you think like how much money gets put into promoting I don't know what, and then how little money gets put into promoting Zach and Miri, Kevin Smith's last film. Just, and then take it outside, and I'm getting off on a rant here, but, you know, take it outside the whole thing, and you think how much money gets wasted on pointless, I want to swear, flipping garbage. when, you know, there are people starving, and there are, like, and yet Eminem's record needs to be, you know, promoted and sold, like, it's just...
Now, remember, listeners at home, since we're talking about wastefulness and better uses of time, that we, of course, don't mean the Generation Goat podcast specifically.
No, not at all.
Listeners. Listen, the time you spend listening to us, I'm gonna go out on a limb, could one day establish a world peace.
I don't think you're going on a limb. I think it's a fair... it's fair to guess that that's what might happen.
Yeah, I think it's 85% likely. Probably.
If nothing else, you could get the world, leaders of the world to unite against right. A podcast after a goat, you know?
You know, I was listening to your rant, and I apologize. I was I was looking for an article I had seen about the Eminem release, because, of course, he, you know, takes issue with apparently Amy Winehouse, Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan. And,
yep.
You know, it really is as if he just is trying to pick up exactly where he left off, like, in time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's criticizing the people who were, you know, more popular back then. But there's a Britney Spears thing in the news here that says that her show was interrupted in Vancouver by marijuana smoke. Because apparently... it says, we want to apologize to all the fans who attended our Vancouver show tonight for the brief pause in Britney's set. Crew members above the stage became ill due to a ventilation issue. Production staff were reportedly worried that crew working high up would become dizzy from the smoke. Spears herself then issued an anti-marijuana message at the end of her show, telling the audience, "Thanks, Vancouver, you were wonderful. Drive safe, don't smoke weed." Now, I've been to a lot of concerts, and you've been to a lot of concerts.
I have.
Have you ever found one that actually stopped to say, "I'm not smoking concert"?
I have never been to a concert that stopped for the sake of smoke or weed or I have also just can't picture people smoking weed at a Britney Spears concert.
Yeah, right?
Although maybe it's
hardcore people.
Maybe it's the parents of the people. Not even so much anymore. I was going to say the parents of the people who are bringing their kids. But seriously, if you're bringing your kids to a Britney Spears concert now, you got something wrong with you. Because it's sort of softcore porn. Her If You Seek Amy song, which is just... I'm done. I'm not saying anything more. I would love to. I would love that movie. I just had a bunch of Reese's Pieces. So
there you go. Yeah. Now you just make yourself a juice box, and you're all good.
Yeah, juice box. I'm not sure where we're at in our time frame. But the word juice box makes me think of one of the episodes of Lost that's happened since we last talked. I can't remember what the last episode we talked about was.
The last episode we talked about would have been...
Was it LaFleur?
LaFleur. Yeah, because we talked about the three of them showing up on the beach.
Right.
The
yep.
Well, out of the van, anyway.
Yes.
The return.
And then there have... there have been a couple of, three episodes since then?
Yeah.
Gosh, it's been a while. So I think, we could talk about other things, but, you know, there's Lost. And you did see last night's episode, you said.
Yeah, hey, there's nothing going on my website, so let's talk about Lost.
No, let's save Lost, because I do want to ask you about... street musicians. You did a post the other day about about some street musicians, and you included a video. That's not your video, but somebody else's video, right?
Somebody else's video.
But still, very interesting. Interested to hear the story and what kind of stuff you were bumping into.
I can give you the cliff notes. It's not that I'm anti-street musician. It's just. You know, you pass a lot of subpar music on the subway or in Harvard Square or, just anywhere where there's a hippie who needs money for pot and happens to own a guitar. It's... Yeah, actually, that was my favorite beggar in Harvard Square ever. Because, you always walk past people and, somebody inevitably says, oh, they're just going to use the money on drugs. I mean, come on.
Right, right.
There are still things, give the money to a church if you want or something. They're just going to use the money on drugs. And there was a guy in Harvard Square who was on the bench in front of the Coop, and he had a cardboard sign. And it said, need money for pot. Please give me money. And I gave him $1. I mean, how can you not promote that kind of honesty?
Right.
So there's a lot of subpar stuff, and I don't like being subjected to it when it's very loud and in a place I'd like to be, but there was this guy, Ken Mercer, who apparently he and his wife are collectively Mercer and Perez, and they sometimes perform in front of the Uffizi Gallery in Florence, but it was just him on a really rainy night where I was grumpy anyway, and this kind of really nice voice came floating across the piazza I was in, and it was awesome. Went over, and there was a crowd gathered around, and they were actually being attentive, and he was really friendly and played a number of kind of cool old songs, and it was cool. It was nice to see someone who clearly wants to be a working musician and wasn't really kind of pandering for change, which was nice.
Right.
So, it was cool. It was a really cool experience, and it was the last place on Earth where I would expect, to find that. So it's very nice. It was right in the middle of a big tourist bubble. There was just this one guy, and it was cool. So, so I wrote my little post. I wrote that actually on the train to Switzerland. Which was its own adventure, traveling first class, because it only cost $10 more. I actually get to have a whole cabin to myself. Me and Nora had this whole cabin, with the door and the train conductor coming in the door periodically.
Right.
It was nice. We actually thought about murdering someone on the train just because it seemed like the right thing to do.
Did you have a particular person in mind, or just you were going to pick someone at random?
No, just pick someone. You know. Okay. Either way. But, yeah. So I wrote a little post yesterday, actually, in commemoration of the 15th anniversary of Kurt Cobain's death. Which wasn't really, it's not a great post, but more or less, I was just kind of sitting around thinking, wow, you know, if this were 10 years ago, I would have a lot more to say. I would have, I linked to a post on the Mountain Goats, Love, 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 which references Cobain. And I had a lot to say when I wrote that just a couple years ago, but the weird thing was it was just kind of like, wow, I mean, I'm still sad about it, and I still wish it didn't happen, and I still spend a lot of time wondering, well, what would it be like now, you know? What would we be doing? But it's only at very specific moments now that I feel really kind of cheated. You know, just like, you know, okay, now. So mostly it was just, I wondered, does that happen to anybody else now? Like, anybody else who really, really, really was sad about it? Like, is it the norm for people to just feel kind of like, well, life's full of bad things, or, you know, I mean, what's the effect now? So mostly I just wanted the post to say, hey, what's up?
Oh, I was just gonna say, I wonder what Ed Ruh thought the other day.
Oh, Ed Ruh.
You know, we talked about it a couple of podcasts back, and it'd be interesting to think about what he said.
We should find him, send him an email that says, hey man, are you still bummed out that Kurt died? Thanks.
Well, I wasn't, but I am now.
Yeah, actually I was managing it fairly well until people keep but or Ed Ruh.
I think I do feel similar that it's still very sad to me, but I don't have a lot to say about it anymore.
It's been a disappointing couple of weeks for music stuff in general, actually. Jimmy Chamberlain quit the Smashing Pumpkins, which was like the one constant, you know, and I am less than impressed with the handling of everything by Mr. Corgan since I last saw him in person. Because, man, what's with that guy? Apparently, he spent most of the 20th anniversary tour berating people. Like, literally stopping concerts to yell at people for not liking him enough. Mm. And that's just lame.
That is lame.
You know, and apparently there's a big message that will be delivered to their website today about the state of things. And I'm sure it'll just be about how we're all haters for wondering why Billy keeps yelling at us. So Jimmy quit, and that's pretty sad because now there's really no one to edit Billy and his ego. And I'm really sad. It's the kind of thing where actually I don't wish that he were dead, but if it's gonna be like this, I almost kind of wish that they weren't together anymore.
That's a very hard band to be a fan of.
It is, but you know, I. Yeah.
There's a lot of good music, but it's...
Yeah. The concerts I went to were great. They really were. But since then, I mean, I don't get it. Billy's manager is the CEO of Ticketmaster. What? And, you know, he's in front of Congress defending Ticketmaster's right to merge with Live Nation and how it'll be good for small artists. Because Ticketmaster has always championed the little guy.
Yeah.
And
there's no reason we called them Ticket Bastard back in the day.
Yeah, you know, and berating fans and making it all about the fact that we don't buy his albums enough. I mean, he basically, you know, he said, well, we're not going to make albums anymore because we don't have record contracts. So we're just going to make little singles or something and maybe release them online because, you know, we're sick to death of the fact that people only care about a couple of songs in any given album, and they don't listen to the whole thing, and they don't want to hear the whole thing at concerts. It's like, well, no, of course they don't. Who does? I mean, whoever does. Mm-hmm. I love The Cure. I do. I have another blog about The Cure, which I have been neglecting, but never mind. You know, I think Disintegration is a fantastic album, but half the time when I listen to Disintegration, I will skip over Fascination Street, and I will often skip over Homesick, because I just feel like it.
Then, right.
Take that, Cure fans. Billy is just so weird, and I was so sad, and I'll get off this topic, but you know, the DVD came out, If All Goes Wrong, about the residencies in Asheville, North Carolina, and the Fillmore in San Francisco. And I was so excited, you know, I was like, I was there. I was there a whole bunch of nights. This is going to be so cool. And the whole thing is about how, you know, fans today aren't like fans used to be, and how, you know, the audiences showed up and they really bummed Billy out because they just wanted to hear popular songs from before, and they wanted to hear this or that, and they didn't want to listen quietly and attentively to everything Billy had to do on the stage. And some people, you know, I think were just there like because it was a thing to do, and they weren't just there because they were like fanatically obsessed with Billy. And it's like, hey, come on.
Oh, man. You know,
come on.
The fact that they release a DVD and have that be the theme of it, it's just like ugh, beyond me.
It's not cool. I mean, I was so sad. I mean, I was there 6 nights, 5 nights, mm-hmm. a lot. And I went across the country to be there. I don't want to hear about how people don't care enough. You know?
Yeah.
It's annoying. Yeah, there's an open bar at the Fillmore, and it's a tiny room. It fits 300 people, so it makes some noise. But
right.
What are you going to do? You know, I mean, you want to stand on the stage with an unamped acoustic guitar and play a little song, and you're expecting everyone to hear it. It's just going to be like, shh, 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 shh. Come on. Who does that in a concert? The only time that's ever happened to me at a concert was at Sigur Rós in London, where there was actually a room so quiet you literally heard someone just kind of like... about 1,000 feet from the stage.
Wow.
But, yeah, you know, I mean, come on. It's not opera, Billy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the Smashing Pumpkins. So...
That is kind of a depressing, depressing music news. That is.
So, I'm wondering what the big news for Billy will be today, but, The only thing it said was some significant topics will be addressed, and it could be considered a, quote, new mission statement regarding the Smashing Pumpkins. You know, when right. we were in a lousy high school band, there, I brought it up again, we had kind of a plan. I think we sat around and made up a plan one day as to how we were all going to be rock stars and geniuses. And, that doesn't work. It's music and a band. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the moment it gets to be too much about the business, it starts to die a little bit. On the other hand, have you seen the what is it? Dig Dialogue with Trent Reznor. The website dig.com, DIGG. They did an interview with him where all of the questions were voted on by fans. And it's interesting to hear Trent talk about how he's approaching the business of things. Because he's really taking, as opposed to the way it sounds like Billy is approaching things. Because you can sense Trent's resentment that he has to give music away for free. He doesn't want music to be free. But he also accepts that that's the reality of things and is trying to work with the fans rather than against the fans. And it's a really interesting article. He really seems to get what's going on with the industry, regardless of whether people like his music or not. I think we need more people thinking the way that he's thinking about music. Maybe not a lot more, because then it becomes a whole... If you have too many people thinking the same way, you end up with the record industry that we have today.
know, actually, sort of something related to that is something I thought about in my Kurt Cobain post. And, you know, I wonder, you know, is it at all possible or fair to say that people who buy the records and people who are in the audience, do they have any sort of responsibility back to the artists themselves? I mean, you know, I go to a concert like the one at the Fillmore, and I'm 5 feet from the stage, and you can hear people talking on both sides. I'm not going to start up a conversation while Billy is saying, okay, so here's the song I wrote today, and I think it's kind of like about this, and here's some stuff I was thinking about, and it reminds me of... I'm not going to start a conversation with the person next to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there were people around me who are like, oh my god, Jesus, did you watch Gossip Girl? I'm like, dude, seriously, what are you doing? you know, I feel like, you know, this guy is performing for me. Yeah, I paid money for that, but I paid money to hear some songs, you know. I think everything else is kind of a bonus. You know, somebody wants to tell you something extra, something useful, I have a responsibility to shut up, you know. It's, mm-hmm. it's fair, it's polite, you know. I know a lot of people don't feel that way. They feel like, well, I paid the monkey is going to perform.
Right.
But what do you think? I mean, do we have, what kind of responsibility would we have, or do we have, or if any?
I think we definitely have a responsibility to, in, I'm really articulate, aren't I?
This whole podcast,
I think there's a, it is not that terrible. I think we have a responsibility to let other people experience I think we have more of a responsibility to the other people in the audience than we do to the performer. Because they all paid money too, and they want to experience it in the way they want to experience it. And I think when we're in our room, we can do whatever we want with the music. When we're in a communal event, I think we owe it to the other people to be polite.
Well, it's like, you know, don't dirty the swimming pool, as it were. I'm so sad that every time I go to a concert, if there's a quiet song, there's going to be 10 people who feel the need to enlighten us with a woo. Like, dude, get it. You're here. Shut up.
Yeah, that was the worst with the Nine Inch Nails performing their tracks from Ghosts on the last tour. They were magical sort of performances, but nobody could shut up. I mean, most people did, but you couldn't get everybody to shut up.
Well, that was the thing about that Sigur Rós concert that will stick with me until I die, because he had, you know, 16 measures of increasingly loud, increasingly intense, and then 8 measures of rest, absolute silence from the stage, and nothing from the crowd. Nothing.
That would be an amazing.
And started playing, people cheered. But, you know, that was pretty cool. But I think basically, that's thing one. Don't be a jerk. You know, don't yell out for Freebird. It's not funny anymore. It's just, I can't tell you how many concerts I've been to where somebody never yells out, Freebird! Not funny.
Not funny. Was it ever? You know, that's the other question.
You know, maybe don't sit on someone's shoulders if we're all standing. Mm. Because the guy might be probably here to see you.
Unless he's very lonely and you're a girl and he's got a good view of something he shouldn't have a good view of.
Even so.
No, don't sit on people's shoulders. Okay, keep going. I think there are more rules.
Are there? I mean,
how do you feel about, I cut you off, but how do you feel about singing along with songs?
Well, if it's a Nine Inch Nails show, chances are no one's going to be able to do it.
That's true.
Go right ahead. If you're at Sleepy Folk's show that's mostly acoustic, maybe make sure that it's invited first.
Right.
But I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. It makes me wonder, as a fan and as someone who occasionally gets to go to things these days, do I have a responsibility? I mean, I don't think that Billy Corgan has a point at all. I think that he's just being ridiculous, and I'm sorry that Billy thought that he would show up at OB 1994 and people would hail him as the Messiah. And quite literally, I was there. Walked on stage in Paris for the first Reunited show, dressed like Jesus in a white robe, and stood in the middle of the stage with his arms straight out in bright light for about 2 minutes. Now, at the time, it just seemed kind of okay, you know, like, okay, well,
right,
it's fine, it's the first show, it's just a funny thing to do. But, that can't persist throughout months and months and months. So, anyway, sorry, everybody at home. This is the podcast of sleepiness and mumbling. Let's just end on a strong note and talk about us some Lost.
Yeah, let's do that. I think one thing I would say before moving on is we shouldn't be so hard on ourselves. You know, it's not...
We totally suck. Right.
What doesn't suck? Lost, right?
That's right. Boom! Look at that transition.
Except for one episode. At least that was my opinion. There was one episode of these three that I didn't like at all.
Okay. Which one was that?
I did not like "He's Our You," the one that came right after "Namaste," the Saeed one. Mm. In my post on it, I said, well, I wasn't in a great mood that night. I was really stressed out. Maybe that had something to do with it. I haven't rewatched it since then. But the whole conceit of that episode felt false to me because I didn't get... If Saeed's whole goal is to shoot Ben, is to kill Ben, wouldn't it make sense for him to agree to Sawyer's deal? Then he's there, he forms a relationship with Ben, and they're able to go out into the jungle. Same thing happens in the end, but he doesn't spend all that time in a cell getting tortured. I think I was too harsh on it, but I'm curious to hear what you thought.
I think they're not accepting... I mean, what were the terms of Sawyer's deal again? He would what? He would let him out and...
He would pretend to be an other that was turning sides and was going to provide some information.
Right.
And that he would live among them.
But the thing is that, you know, he could accept that deal, but what quality of life would he have necessarily? Because then he couldn't leave ever. And I don't think Saeed wants to stick around and play, you know, Dharma Camp. I think Saeed wants to get off the island. He wants to kill Ben. He wants to get off the island. I mean, he has no reason to be there. He went back because he thought he was, well, helping people, and he wanted to stick it to Ben.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody else is okay. And if he could just kill Ben, he could go home and be happy. Except that's 1977.
Right.
So...
Yeah, there is that small matter. I guess it wasn't terrible, but go ahead.
No, I see your point. It was interesting, I think, to see that Horace oversaw Saeed's interrogation because, you know, Horace, so far, whenever there's been a situation where he's had to be kind of menacing, he's always seemed just a little goofy about it, you know?
Really,
they've been trying to build him up as, like, a nice guy who couldn't possibly, like, you know, really do mean stuff because, you know, look at him. Come on. He's Horace. So it was interesting to see that he was happy to oversee the interrogation, which I think kind of makes him a little more complicated than we had. You know, as for the other episodes, you know, what can you really say about Namaste? I think it's cool to see everybody integrated. It's nice that it worked out. It doesn't really stick in my memory as much as something like whatever happened.
Yeah, Namaste. Looking at my iTunes library to remind myself of what happened. That was a Sun episode, basically. It was Sun and Jin, kind of. That was a good one, but yeah, it doesn't really stick out in my brain. Whatever happened, happened. Really sticks out in my brain because I had sort of given up on Kate as a character, not on Evangeline Lilly as an actress, because I still think she's a great actress, but I had given up on Kate because it seemed like every time Kate got a story, it was always a love triangle story and nothing else. And while I realized that's sort of the primary reason Kate is there, there were episodes in seasons, particularly season one, but season one, two, even I Do from season three, where she's married to Nathan Fillion, I think. Great episodes, but lately, a lot of the stuff in her non-centric episodes has not been great for her. But then this one was just, the fact that she, even if it's not entirely that she came back for Claire, the fact that she says she came back for Claire was so refreshing that it wasn't that she came back for Sawyer. You know, at least she's telling herself that she came back to do this sort of motherly thing.
No, I'm really happy about that too. What do you think about Aaron, man? I mean, do you think we've really seen the last of Aaron at this point?
No, I think something is being. I really feel like this is becoming. Well, this season has involved a lot of people where we see them as kids and now we're seeing them as adults, and I think that trend's going to continue, and I actually kind of have this suspicion that we might see both Aaron and Ji Yan and maybe even Charlie Hume at some point in the future. I wouldn't bet money on that, but I kind of feel like we're going to see them at some point. I just think they're too important.
I think my greatest question...
Maybe Charlie less so.
Yeah. I think my biggest question about the show, and it's kind of a really ephemeral question, but when I think about it and I think about the kind of storytelling that they like to do, I keep wondering how this is all going to come back to Adam and Eve. You know, the two people they found in the caves in the first season by that campfire. And I keep wondering, who are they and when are we going to know? You know? What are we really going to know? Who are they going to be that we already know is what I wonder, because, you know, with the time traveling, it opens up the possibility that it could be two of our losties in 1977 that die there, you know?
Right.
Or it could be people in Jughead's time, you know, that die.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it introduces an interesting circularity, you know, in a way, and I wonder if that will ever come back to us again.
Yeah. I worry that there are going to be certain things that... I kind of feel like with this show, everybody's got one little mystery that they're hoping will get solved that isn't going to get solved. I kind of wonder whether Adam and Eve might be one of those ones that never comes up. What's the other one that I was thinking of? The other one that a lot of people are wondering about... There are many of these that I feel like they've brought them in. Oh, everyone wants to know Libby's backstory. There's like a lot of people out there who want to know that. And I think the producers have come out and said, we don't have time to deal with Libby at this point. And so I don't worry about the show in general. I worry just everyone's got their little pet thing that they're like, this has got to be answered. How can they end the show without answering this? And if I worry about the show trying to do anything, it's trying to do too much in season six to answer all the questions. And unless they come naturally, I'm not gonna worry about questions being answered. You know, we're learning more about Smokey each time. We learned more about Smokey last night. I have to go back and rewatch some of that and freeze frame some of those scenes in the underground. because there was some Egyptian stuff there that I was really interested in. What did you think of last night's episode?
Well, it's really cool to see more of the temple. And to get, sorry, I was listening to you, but I was looking at a recent interview about Adam and Eve. If I can back up for a second. In which the producers tell us that in the season one DVDs there are some Easter eggs which have an anagram that sheds some light on the skeletons and a larger mythological mystery. And yeah, that they may very well come up again. So they said that when all is said and done, people are going to point to the skeletons and say that is proof that from the very beginning they always knew that they were going to do this.
Oh, okay. So
hurrah for that. Anyway, last night we had Dead is Dead, and pretty cool. A little strange the way that Ben and Locke are just kind of, you know, working together despite everything. Interesting that Locke is commanded to be in charge by the monster.
Right.
You gotta wonder how long Ben's gonna put up with that.
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna put up with it well.
I mean, you know, Locke asked him what happened, and all Ben could say is, "It let me live."
Which I kind of, there's a sense of sadness in that. Kind of, he wishes he'd been judged and been killed. Almost, I almost got out of his reading of that line.
You know, because, I mean, for the past, what, season and a half, the whole thing's been about how Ben might not be the darling of the island anymore. And
right.
How the island may be choosing a replacement. And now this, you know, he's effectively been demoted again, as it were.
Yeah.
So, you know, interesting stuff. It's nice to see a little bit more about Widmore on the island. It's nice to have a...
That was really nice.
To the island.
I was a little shy. I was saying to Stephanie last night as we watched it, there were lots of little moments that didn't quite shock me, they surprised me. And I liked that I was surprised rather than shocked, because by that I mean everything was subtle, it was not done for shock value. I was surprised that Widmore's exit from the island was as peaceful as it was. I kind of imagined that that somehow Ben had tricked Widmore into turning the wheel at some point, and that's how he had been shunted off the island. The fact that he was just sent away on the submarine was interesting, and the fact that he was judged for having a relationship with an outsider, also interesting. Because we were sitting there the whole night, and we were like, the whole night, the whole hour, wondering, when did he go off and have Penny? Like, when's that going to happen?
Right.
And so that was a satisfying answer for me, that he'd been going off the island.
Yeah.
And I like the actor that was playing him in the 77 scene, and I hope we get to see him a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I think it would be interesting.
Yeah, so it's, I can't believe there are only three, well, you know, 1 2-hour, but only three episodes left in the season.
Insane. And there's a week-long break too, I think, which I, the 22nd, I think there's no episode.
That needs to stop
happening. Just annoying. But I guess they're trying to capitalize on sweeps. And
now, is season 6 going to start up in the fall, or is it going to start up next January or something?
My guess is that it'll start in January. That would be my guess, just because I think they've established the start in January time frame.
Yeah.
And they can get... I think maybe it depends on whether or not somebody manages to leak the whole story of the finale, because maybe if that happened they would want to accelerate production so there's not so much time between when they produce it and when it airs. But I still kind of feel like they're going to try and do the January to May schedule for the final. That's just my gut. I don't know either way.
No, I'll tell you,
it's going to be painful to wait.
As long as it's as good as this this season, I think I'll be very happy.
It's not. I'm curious to see where they leave things off. Since I already know it's going to be a painful wait, I'm not dreading the finale as much as I would normally, because I'm just gonna be pleased to see how it ends. You know, how this season ends, where, and then you get 9 months or so to imagine what's gonna happen. Or 6 months, however many months, 6 or 7 months, to imagine what's going to happen when they come back. The finales have always been so so good. I don't know what the cliffhanger is going to be. Have you heard what the title of the cliffhanger? They always have a code name in the secret scene.
Yeah, it's the fork in the outlet, right?
Yep, yeah, the fork in the outlet, which. It's shocking, right? Not as right on the nose as Frozen Donkey Wheel, and getting more back to the snake in the mailbox in terms of it's going to surprise you. The first couple were like a bagel and something else, so they've definitely gotten better in that department.
Well, once people know that you do that, then you've got to make it more interesting. So, well, I think that sounds like a Generation Goat. Pretty meandering, pretty pointless. Anything coming up on your site this week that we should all know about?
This week,
or I guess next week, because you know,
next week, I hope to be less pointless and directionless on my website, I guess. I've been pretty pointless and directionless because of the tournament, but hoping to get back on track. How about you?
I continue to be pointless and directionless because that's my thing.
That's how we roll here at Generation Guild.
That's the way it works over at Songs That Save Your Life. We don't really have a point or purpose. We just kind of are. But we'll keep doing that. Hopefully finally get through some of those other projects. There is a forum now for this, for everything, but for this podcast, so people could come and like say mean things about us at songsthatsavedyourlife.com forum.
I encourage people to do that. I will come say some mean things right now.
Nice. So that's, you know, that's one thing to do, and still working on the whole MP3 thing. Should be done by the end of Easter weekend. By the way, have a good Easter, and you too, listener, or Passover, or whatever, some sort of pagan bunny tree thing that you might be doing instead. And that's Generation Goat. Bye, Chris.
Bye, John.